Britain's Foreign Secretary William Hague said today that Syria is at a fork in the road as he justified Britain's view that military intervention in the Middle East country is not an option. The U.S. is saying the same thing, even as NATO countries, including Canada, stepped up attacks on Libya in the last 48 hours. International leaders have been speaking out and condemning the Syrian government's brutal crackdown against its civilian protesters, but that's where it stops. Since the first of this month, Syrians have been in the streets demanding change in the dictatorial rule of the Assad family. The regime of President Bashar al-Assad has responded with live ammunition and tanks. Estimates today put the death toll at 453, with reports of unburied bodies lying in the streets of Deraa, where the protests and the government's brutal response to them have been most pronounced. It's hard to verify the numbers. We are told hundreds of people have been arrested. Foreign media have been barred from the country, and reporting from inside Syria has always been problematic. Many Syrians, fearing for their safety, are now reluctant to leave their homes. But social media has helped Syrians tell the world what is happening inside places such as Deraa. Suzanne Kwamala is a Syrian living in Valparaiso, Indiana. Her family is in Damascus and Deraa, and she has been gathering information and sending it out via Twitter and Facebook and translating videos on YouTube.
You watch these videos and it's like, oh, that's where my house is. That's where we grew up. That's my home. That's my uncle's home. When you hear the numbers, it's one thing. But when you recognize the names of people you knew, like your neighbors, it's like, that's people who I know who are being shelled, who are being sniped. When you see the videos, they've been killed. They've been shot at. The water tanks have been sniped. So now there's no storage for water. Even hospitals don't have water. And that's ridiculous. It's hard and it's a strain. But at the same time, it's like, we're not in any way suffering as much as the people there. And the least we can do is try to get as much media coverage for the issues there as possible.
Well, from inside Syria this morning, we're joined by George Jabour. He is a former member of the Syrian parliament. He's in Damascus. Hello.
Hello.
What do you make of the tape we just heard?
I don't like to doubt its authenticity, but I cannot confirm it. Anyway, what I want to say is very simple. Let us be constructive regarding bloodshed in Syria. I condemn bloodshed. I condemn atrocities. I hope that conciliation be restored. I have been trying to, make some sort of efforts at reform for a long time, but then some of them succeeded, some of them had less chances of succeeding, and then the situation now is deteriorating.
You say the situation is deteriorating. The death count is now at 453, well above 450. I mean, you're in Damascus. What are you hearing about what's going on in Deraa?
Well, I certainly feel the pain of the people of Deraa. I feel the pain of the people of Deraa in my heart, and also I feel that security should be restored, that certainly peace should be restored, conciliation should prevail, and I hope that we all work for constructive peace, for constructive conciliation.
And what do you see in Damascus?
Damascus is quiet, is calm, nothing at all. I haven't seen anything happening in Damascus. Damascus is quite calm.
You say that you're hoping security can be restored. How do you think of what do you think of how the government is responding? Because it has responded with brute force.
The government says that the other side started it, and the other side says that the government started it. I condemn all bloodshed, no matter from where it comes.
But only one side has a military and a security police.
The other side, that's right. But then the military also have their people who were killed. I don't think the military killed the military.
But what we are seeing in Syria is people on the streets and the government killing them. And so when you talk about restoring order and you talk about the need for peace, how do you see...
Perhaps you are seeing this from Canada. I haven't seen it in Syria.
Well, that's because the government controls the media.
Well, fine. So why don't you talk with the government? I am a former parliamentarian who sort of wrote a book before the end of my term proclaiming that there should be more interest in human rights in the parliament. I made my views clear on this subject.
What do you think the solution to this crisis should be?
Stoppage of atrocities, stoppage of killings, stoppage of violence, national reconciliation, national dialogue for reaching reconciliation.
But how do you have reconciliation in a country that is run by a man who inherited power, that is a tyranny, that is known for its torture of prisoners? How do you have a dialogue with a government like that?
What? We should kill our president?
No, I'm not suggesting that. I'm asking how you have a dialogue with a president who comes from a history of dictatorship.
So what is your solution?
Well, I don't know. You live there.
Okay, I don't know either.
Okay.
I am for conciliation. I am for dialogue, for national dialogue. I told you about my efforts at reform when I was a member of parliament. I would like that we move from the state of Hobbes, Thomas Hobbes, to the state of John Locke, in the sense of transforming the social contract from the obedience to the strong to the obedience of the consented people.
And given that you have been pushing for this, do you feel that you have made any progress?
I hope some good people, some good willing people would help me in this, would help Syria, would help the humanity, would help everybody who needs help.
George DeBoer, thank you for speaking with me.
Thank you.
George DeBoer is a former member of the Syrian parliament. He's the president of the UN Association of Syria, and we spoke to him from Damascus. Robert Fisk is the Middle East correspondent for the British newspaper The Independent. He's been covering this story from Beirut. Hello. Hello, Robert Fisk.
Hi.
What can you tell us? What are you hearing today? What do you think of what you just heard?
Well, I've been hearing it a lot here. The strange thing for me is that I go to Damascus very frequently, and I've had several senior Syrian officials, including a minister, ring me up saying, why aren't you here? So I said, well, give me a visa. And they said, yes, no problem, but the visa doesn't arrive. Isn't that strange? Obviously, there is a decision to keep the world's eyes away from Syria, but unfortunately, like most of the dictatorships in the Middle East, these people don't realize that what we call social journalism, which is a phrase I don't like, is enabling us to see astonishing images and pictures from Deraa, Banias, Latakia, Aleppo, Hama, Homs, other major Syrian cities of great violence by the Syrian security forces. The fact of the matter is that this began as part of the revolutions that are spreading throughout the Middle East. The Syrians, as usual, like all the other dictatorships, I'm not talking about the Syrian people, I'm talking about the Syrian regime, like all the other dictatorships, started blaming foreign hands, foreign plots, etc., when quite clearly what had happened is that the people had matured, grown up, and wanted dignity and democracy. It's as simple as that. I would say now, however, and it was a point that your previous speaker, the MP, was trying to make, and it's important, that I'm watching Syrian television, I'm talking to Syrian friends whom I see here all the time. You have to realize that an awful lot of people in Lebanon are married to Syrians, they have Syrian citizenship, they go backwards and forwards. Quite clearly, Syrian soldiers are being shot in quite large numbers. I was very shocked to see two nights ago, for example, the funeral of seven Syrian soldiers whose bodies were shown on television, terribly mutilated. Now, who killed them? I'm not saying the protesters did. I don't believe that. Protesters in their tens of thousands are immensely brave people demanding the democracy that they deserve in Syria from a president who, frankly, thinks he seems to own Syria, which is amazing. He thinks of it as his private property. But there are obviously groups moving around now with weapons who are also attacking the Syrian security forces. Now, having seen the way, and I was at Hama in 1982 and saw the shameful, outrageous cruelty of the Syrian security forces towards the people there, you know, you might say, well, why have sympathy with them? But the point is, if there are organized groups with weapons now moving around Syria, especially in the Deraa area, then we're on the path to civil war in Syria, not just social unrest.
Well, let me ask about that, because you've, in fact, written that very thing today in The Independent. If that is the case, Robert, what we're also seeing is Western nations very reluctant to get involved right now. What do you make of that? Is that because they think there's a civil war brewing?
No, it's the usual hypocrisy. The West isn't going to get involved with Syria, because if it gets involved militarily with Syria, it will get involved militarily with Iran. You've got to remember, I mean, I know we're all obsessed with Libya at the moment because, you know, NATO's involved in bombarding Gaddafi on behalf of the rebels. But the truth of the matter is that geopolitically and for historical reasons, this crisis or this fight, this bloodshed, in massive bloodshed,
in Syria is infinitely more important than Libya. And you've got to remember that Syria is in alliance with Iran. If Syria were to fall as a regime, Iran loses its lung, if you like, in the Arab world to breathe through. At the same time, the Hezbollah in Lebanon, regarded by the Israelis as their principal enemies around them, are then cut off from Iran because Syria is the source of their weaponry and money. It doesn't come from Syria, it passes through Syria from Iran. So the stakes here are immensely high, and many people here in Lebanon, where I am now, are very fearful that if this gets out of control in Syria, then Bashar al-Assad, if he indeed controls Syria, I think his brother Maher, his little brother, has a lot more to do with it. He's running the 4th Brigade of the Army, which appears to be the unit used in Daraa, which powered its way into the city on Monday, killing so many people. Then there's a great danger that the Syrian regime will allow civil unrest to spread into Lebanon, where we also have, particularly in the north, Alawites, which is, of course, the offshoot of Shiism, which runs the Syrian regime. Bashar al-Assad is an Alawite. And we also have Sunni Muslims. And that, in a sense, what will happen is that the Syrians will shove their civil conflict here into Lebanon, too, and say, OK, you don't like the Ba'ath Party, you don't like Bashar al-Assad, well, let's see what happens in Lebanon as well. It's a very dangerous situation at the moment. I think that if we could only get people to take their eyes off NATO bombardments of Tripoli, they might see how serious and how dangerous the situation is in this part of the Middle East.
Okay, well, so briefly then, let me ask you, as someone who has watched so much turmoil in the Middle East, what are you watching for? What should they be doing? What should the UN still talking? What should be done?
I don't think the West can do anything here. It's failed repeatedly for 35 years to do anything in Lebanon. It doesn't want to do anything. The Americans hated Syria, then they loved Syria, now they hate Syria again, and our policies here have been so hypocritical, I think we should keep our noses out of it. Libya's quite enough, and so is Iraq, and so is Afghanistan for the moment, I think.
Okay, Robert Fisk, thanks for speaking with me.
You're welcome.
That is Robert Fisk. He covers the Middle East for The Independent, the British newspaper. We reached him in Beirut. Well, Maher Arar knows firsthand what the Syrian regime is capable of. He is a Canadian citizen who spent a year imprisoned in his native Syria. He was sent there by the U.S. on a rendition flight. He was held in a dark, narrow cell and tortured after being falsely identified as a terror suspect by the RCMP. Maher Arar is now an adjunct research professor at the School of Information and Technology at the University of Ottawa. He's also the publisher of PRISM, an online magazine focused on national security issues. And Maher Arar is in our Ottawa studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
What do you make of what you just heard from Robert Fisk?
Well, I do agree with his analysis. He's very experienced on Middle Eastern issues. I share his concern regarding the civil and war in this region, not only Syria. But I do also have hope from what I've seen on the Facebook and YouTube video clips. People are extremely aware of this scenario, and just you can listen to their slogans. That gives you hope that this civil unrest will not happen.
Now, you have made the point that the Syrian regime is the most brutal of all dictatorships in the Middle East, even more so than Libya's Muammar Gaddafi. What makes you say that? Remind us.
Well, many things. In 1982, there was a massacre that took place in Hama. The most conservative estimates say that at least 10,000 people were killed. It's very clear that the Syrian regime does not tolerate any kind of dissent. And what we are witnessing these days is a proof. For instance, even in Libya, some Western media was allowed in Egypt as well as Tunisia. Syria, they don't allow any foreign journalists to go in. And one can only wonder why.
And as you were as you've seen, people taking to the streets, how do you respond? Were you surprised?
I was actually expecting people to start voicing out their opinions, especially after the Egyptian revolution. But I was not expecting this to happen that soon. Apparently, you know, the Facebook and YouTube made the huge difference and encouraged people to go out to the streets. But I let me say this. I take my hat off to the Syrian people for their courage and determination. I grew up in Syria. I lived when I was 17. I know what it means. This is aside from the year I spent there in the detention center as well as the Sinai prison. And I can tell you they are really sacrificing a lot by just going out to the street and demonstrating.
Are you following it on are you looking at that video? Are you talking to people back there?
I am following this on a daily basis on Facebook and YouTube, but frankly, I'm now mostly reading as opposed to watching videos, but because I can't see the blood anymore, it's extremely brutal.
The pictures are really graphic, aren't they?
Very graphic.
What do you want to see this country and other Western countries do on this?
Well, I think it is about time for the UN to intervene and refer this to the International Criminal Court. There is now enough evidence that which suggests that atrocities are being committed against civilians, innocent civilians, and especially by special forces allied or headed by the Bashar's brother, Maher al-Assad. And I think that will put extreme pressure on the regime. And as Robert Fisk just mentioned, the world's attention is now directed towards Libya, and that gives the green light almost to maybe indirect the green light to the Syrian regime to continue its atrocities against people.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we just, you know, we did see, I mean, in the news today, the story is that neither the United States nor Britain are interested in any kind of intervention. How do you respond to their view?
Well, I think their main concern is stability in the region. As much as they don't like the Syrian regime, as much as they think it's the most suitable regime to keep stability in the region, and I think unfortunately, every time we speak about that region in particular, the West sees the anything happening in the region through the spectrum of the security of Israel. And for them, you know, it's at least a devil that they can predict, as opposed to whoever may come next. And I don't think it's a rational thinking.
Well, we just heard Robert Fisk talk about also this for the security of Lebanon, right? I mean, the fear that there will be a domino effect. I mean, do you buy that? Do you think that should stop them?
Well, I think yes. That's why I kept referring to region as opposed only to Syria. But I think the Syrian people are mature enough to realize the danger of what could happen if they don't, you know, follow the rules. I think people are now have grown up and they understand politics as opposed to before. People are reading more. Now, you know, well, there is a risk of civil war. I don't think it's a huge risk as far as there could be foreign of course hands at the ultimately, but I don't think their fear is legitimate. But let me emphasize the point that I don't think the Western government should intervene. I think the UN should intervene.
Okay.
And at the minimum they should refer this to the International Criminal Court. And
okay.
believe me, that will make a huge difference.
We have to end it there. Thank you for speaking with me.
Thank you.
That's Maher Arar. He was arrested in the U.S. in 2002 after Canadian government intelligence sources handed over faulty information. He was a victim of the U.S. rendition program, forcibly transported to Syria, tortured in Syria for a year, speaking to us about his views on Syria.